Hello, I'm Douglas Kretz, and this is, again, the Microsoft BizSpark show, where we're talking to the newest startups, bootstrapped and funded, who are using the Microsoft BizSpark program or they're using Windows Azure to start up their company. We have a really great show today. We're talking to the founder of a new company called Flight Hike, which purports to be the Uber for general aviation, that's founded by a guy named Carl Trier, who is from the UK but is living now in Cincinnati. Carl, it's really nice to have you on the show. Why don't you say hello and then tell us a little bit about what Flight Hike is going to be.
Sure. Thanks, Doug, for inviting me onto BizSpark.
Pleasure.
And giving me the opportunity to talk about Flight Hike. I think it's a very exciting concept. As you said, it's really kind of like the Airbnb or Uber of air travel. I think the reality is that commercial air travel is a necessary evil. Nobody really likes to fly the commercial airlines, and there's a lot of reasons we can talk about why, but I think most people know what they don't like about that experience. So what we're trying to do with Flight Hike is really leverage an incredible national asset in the United States initially, which is the general aviation asset.
And for people who probably don't know that, maybe they're like me, I don't think that I can afford to fly general aviation, and maybe I have a wrong view of what it is. Is general aviation basically the private or municipal airports around the country where you can fly in the prop-driven airplanes or the jet aircraft that seat about 12 to 15? Could you maybe explain what that whole industry is?
Yeah, exactly. So really, general aviation is a very broad term. It's everything other than the commercial airlines.
Okay.
So that spans everything from single-engine prop planes up to the business jets, medical helicopters. Everything that isn't a commercial airline falls under this broad umbrella of general aviation.
Right.
The thing that most people don't realize about general aviation is really the size of that asset. There's approximately 15,000 airports, which is, you know, the commercial airlines only fly out of 500 airports nationally. General aviation flies out of 15,000. You know, you think about the San Francisco area, there's 12 or 13 airports other than San Francisco Airport that you could take a flight out of. So one of the benefits of Flight Hike is the likelihood is there's a general aviation airport significantly closer to you than the commercial airport that you might otherwise fly out of. So Flight Hike aims to take advantage of that resource.
So do you think that this is a market that is underutilized, or does this kind of industry need to build capacity in order to sort of make more options available? I mean, what's the current state of that market?
Of the general aviation market, I think it's really an underutilized asset, in the sense that most people really don't know about it, don't understand it, don't realize that there's an asset there that they can use. Most people think of, well, my only choices are the commercial airlines or maybe business jets, you know, things like that. One of the things that we will certainly have to do as Flight Hike, as a startup, is really educate people about what general aviation is and the benefits of using that asset, which are numerous. And everybody I talk to about all of the benefits of taking a flight on a general aviation aircraft through a system like Flight Hike, you know, totally get it.
Yeah. Is it affordable? I mean, how much would it cost for me to fly, say, let's just pick a random let's say halfway across the country from San Francisco, one of the 12 or 13 airports.
Right. So I think the further the distance, the less it becomes an effective competitor to commercial airlines. I'll give you a better example.
Okay.
Really, when you think about, particularly if you live in a small city that's maybe not served by a large hub airport, but if I think about, for example, going from Cincinnati to Cleveland, which typically would be a 4 or 5 hour drive, if I were to do that through a Flight Hike general aviation flight, I'd be looking at maybe an hour and a half travel time. And depending upon the type of aircraft, I might get that flight for as little as $65 to $95 one way, which would be significantly cheaper than doing that on a commercial airline. But the real benefits are the fact that I've got more airports to choose from, so my drive time will be shorter. I'm not faced with a 45-minute check-in time. I can literally arrive probably 5 minutes before the pilot's ready to depart. I can typically park within walking distance of the aircraft. I don't have TSA security, and chances are I'm probably going to have a whole lot more fun on that flight than I would, you know, sitting
Right.
And what are variably packed commercial flights now.
Right. And I'm sure for a lot of business people out there, that's a wonderful experience to have when you don't have to worry about the security lines, for one. The parking fees in and of themselves are almost the price of half of the flight and whatnot. But I guess what I'm trying to drive at is, so if you look at Airbnb, you use that as an example of Flight Hike being the Airbnb of general aviation. They now have currently more rooms to let or to rent than Hilton has any rooms at all as an entire corporation. So I'm just wondering, what is the potential market? Do you mean in terms of planes? Do you count this in terms of pilots? Do you count this in terms of airports? I think we lost Carl. Maybe Carl got upset that we were talking about this and he decided to leave. We'll wait till Carl gets back. To me, this is a fascinating subject because I think there's probably only one other competitor that I can think about, which is it BlackJet, which is started by the same guys who funded Uber, which is the taxi service. If anybody out there has a question they would like to ask Carl, or if you guys think that I'm completely off the mark with my questions, let me know. We'll just wait to get Carl back. And then Carl is back. Welcome.
So I kind of dropped off where you were talking about Flight Hike being the Airbnb, and that's what I was.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, when you're talking about capacity or building capacity in order to rent out these flights, are you talking in terms of pilots available, planes available, airports available? I mean, how do you look at it from a business point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an abundance of capacity, quite honestly. I mean, there's 225,000 aircraft in the GA fleet. Mm-hmm. There's something in excess of 600,000 pilots, and there really aren't any accurate statistics on the number of general aviation flights that occur within a year, but it's in the tens or hundreds of millions. So it's not a question of there being a lack of capacity. It's a question of actually connecting that resource with passengers.
I got it.
And really, that's the unique thing about Flight Hike, is I think we'll be the first attempt to really connect those two resources together. People who want to go places, short distances, they don't want to fly via a hub, you know, they don't want all of the negative experiences of commercial flight, with pilots who are quite honestly looking for ways to offset the cost of their flying activity. So I don't think it's a lack of capacity. And in fact, I think what will happen, hopefully, is if Flight Hike becomes very successful, we'll actually trigger a resurgence in general aviation activity, which is a little bit suppressed right now because of the cost of fuel.
Okay. So is this just a simple e-commerce problem then? I mean, is this just basically throwing up an Azure-based site or, you know, something hosted in the cloud and just making sure that people who want to go to point A can get to point A? Or how do you imagine it as a business or a technical founder to this endeavor?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes beyond a little bit of more than an e-commerce problem. There are some regulatory challenges that we've thought long and hard about over the last year or two, to make sure that we don't infringe on those regulatory challenges or FAA regulations. I think also, you know, when you think about these types of businesses, it becomes much more of an experience-to-experience type of problem. So, you know, technically it's not a huge challenge for us to create a website that, you know, allows pilots to list where they're going and allows passengers to find those flights. I think what's more important is really how we market it and how we communicate and how we educate the potential customer base.
So yeah,
that's really, really one of the reasons we're out aggressively fundraising, is to make sure that we have those materials and that experience nailed down before we launch.
I was just going to ask you about the fundraising, because it would seem to me that most of your search for funds would have to be around the marketing part, and probably not so much the infrastructure cost, but just getting the word out and educating the, you know, the potential users. What is the fundraising experience like for you right now? Is it a successful thing? Do people understand what it is you're talking about? Is this a new thing to a lot of investors? What are you hearing when you're going out there and talking to folks?
I think the first challenge is, as with everybody we talk to about this, it's a case of educating them about the fact that this alternate resource, this alternate aviation resource exists. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after the first few pitches to investors, I quickly realized, you know, we had to spend some time talking about what general aviation was and how accessible it could be as a transportation medium. Beyond that, you know, it was interesting. I was watching the Brad Feld video today as kind of an example of what the show was like. And, you know, I think one of the things he said, which is very, very telling, and I've certainly experienced in all the previous startups I've been involved with, is every VC or every investor wants to hear the message in a different way. Some of them are very focused on financials and team. Some of them are very focused on seeing a demo of what the experience will look like. And some of them are very focused on, you know, other aspects of the business. So it's I think the key is to really research as much as possible the investor before you go in, so that you can fine tune that presentation to what it is they're expecting to hear.
Can you talk a little bit about your prior experience to setting up Flight Hike? I mean, you've mentioned that you were involved in startups before. You started out, I mean, did your entrepreneurial journey start out in the United Kingdom? And maybe take us back to that point. What were you doing before you came up with this idea?
Yeah, so I've been involved in information technology for 27 years. You know, I've had a couple of stints working for Fortune 500 companies. I really probably got the entrepreneurial bug in the UK, where I did, you know, I think what people would call intrapreneurship. You know, I started a venture within a larger company that proved to be very successful. And that's really what got me transferred to Cincinnati in 1990. That company shut down their Cincinnati office, and I didn't want to move where they were moving. So that's really kind of where then I gave up my Fortune 500 career path and started to look at, you know, entrepreneurial ventures where I was the boss. And, you know, I've been through several software startups in Cincinnati, all of them, you know, kind of Microsoft technology centric. Mm-hmm. You know, Flight Hike's just the latest iteration. You know, I think everybody talks, you know, when you read the Guy Kawasaki books and all those kinds of books, they really talk about the best venture will come when you have an intersection about the things that you're most passionate about. And, you know, probably the two things I'm most passionate about are technology, mm-hmm, and aviation. Being a private pilot, that's kind of my other, you know, major passion.
Sure. You know, I want to talk about the entrepreneur thing, because, you know, I do know that there are a lot of people in our audience who are IT professionals themselves, or they're software specialists. They're working in big companies because they're just making their dollar, they're making their weekly paycheck or their monthly paycheck, but they also have these dreams of maybe starting something off. You know, what are some of those things that you think intrapreneurs should be thinking about, you know, before they even think, oh, this could be a business? What should they be structuring into some kind of solution within a company to give it the kind of success that you saw with your own? I mean, when you look back at that, are there little secret recipes that you could maybe provide to people about what you think had legs and what made people pay attention to it?
Well, I think the real advantage of entrepreneurship and the way to kind of approach that and the way it was successful for me was to look at the fact that most of the larger companies lack the agility to respond to market demand. You know, so you kind of want to come up with an idea internal to the company that responds to market demand in a way that the company's not going to be able to respond to quickly enough. But then it really becomes a pitch exercise, just like you would pitch an external entrepreneurial venture. You know, what is it you want to do, and who are the people who can give the green light to that? Mm-hmm. You know, the challenge typically in Fortune 500 companies, though, is, you know, quite often at a middle management level, you can get the green light, and then when senior management finds out about it, they kind of shut it down because it's not really what you're supposed to be doing.
Sure.
So it's certainly a much more political exercise to be an entrepreneur than it is if you're just a classical entrepreneur.
That's interesting. Were there bits of evidence that you could provide, or were there different kinds of conversations that you had that gave that political edge, that maybe blunted that kind of political edge and made things successful? I mean, is there any example you could provide of, like, where you were able to drop something on someone's table and nobody did brush it back and say, no, this is what you're supposed to be doing? Speaking to the bottom line, or is it basically speaking to somebody's ego, or is it speaking to the machinations of the group, or how do you classify that?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the first thing you said is probably the most attractive in most companies is, you know, how can we influence the bottom line?
Yeah.
You know, and if you can show customer proof points that what you want to do is beneficial to them and will generate a meaningful revenue, and the cost of doing that in an intrapreneurial fashion is far less than the cost of kind of formulating a true internal program, then you can typically kind of blow through those political roadblocks. and be successful. You know, and some companies, I think, are very amenable to entrepreneurship, and some companies, you know, are very siloed and against that. So I think you will kind of have a sense of the company you work in as to whether or not you're going to kind of be able to flow through those barriers.
If you look back at your entrepreneur experience, now you look at your fundraising experience with Flight Hike, are there investors where you have to keep going back to them with a different message, with more evidence, or do you basically give each person one shot and then you just move on to the next? I mean, is there any kind of, like, what kind of resolve, I guess, do you have to have to keep pitching? Because I'm wondering if in Cincinnati, do you have access to a lot of VC or angel capital? I think that's probably the first question.
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati certainly is kind of a small market relative to the ability to raise capital. It's certainly improving here, and we've got incubators and things like that that are really starting to flourish in Cincinnati. But there's no doubt, relative to West Coast or East Coast, you know, it's a much smaller market ability to raise capital. So we're not limiting ourselves to kind of the geographical area of Cincinnati as places where we could, you know, potentially raise capital. You know, I think to answer your question about the stamina, you know, that raising capital in a startup is definitely the hardest thing to do. Mm-hmm. It does take a lot of stamina. You've got to be prepared to listen to a lot of no's and a lot of criticism about your idea and kind of continue on. You know, I think when a VC tells you that they want you to come back with more and more, more often than that, that's a polite way of them really saying no.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think you really want to kind of be fine-tuned to, are they being polite or are they genuinely really interested in your idea?
Well, that brings to mind another question. This is a conversation we were actually having in the community today. Why should you go to a VC for money?
You know, and I don't think VCs are the only place you can go to for money. I mean, there are certainly private investors. You know, there are other places, and we're approaching both private investors and VCs. You know, I think, and again, I think Brad kind of nailed it on the head. You know, VCs, you want to be careful to pick a VC that is complementary to your business, that has firms in their portfolio that are similar to the kind of thing you're doing, because you really want them to add more than just monetary value. You know, VCs certainly give you typically a greater kudos in the startup marketplace if you're taking money from a known VC than if you're taking it from, you know, the wealthy doctor down the road.
Sure. But I'm just wondering if there's anything, like, if you go through an internal list with your team and you say to yourself, okay, now we're ready for this search for investment. Not necessarily VC investment or not necessarily wealthy individuals, but what is the type of thing you should be seeking money to fund? As in, what part of the company needs that funding?
You know, I think with something like Flight Hike and some other ventures I've been involved with, I think it's harder to raise money around product development. You know, the reality is that, you know, website and technology development has accelerated so greatly now that you can really do that kind of in a bootstrap fashion. You can do that, you know, in parallel with your day job if you're still employed. You know, I think really it's easier to raise money around marketing and the launch and growth of the business than it is to say, you know, we need $500,000 or $1 million to actually build the product. Mm-hmm. You know, then you're really just kind of pitching an idea. And I think when you just pitch an idea, it can be harder for you to get that initial investment. Whereas if you can show a working prototype or a working product or a proof of concept and really talk more about the launch and the path to revenue, then it becomes an easier raise. So in my case, you know, the majority of the Flight Hike technology is now built. You know, some of the funds we would raise would be around what I would call user experience. So I'm not a talented designer. You know, I'm a good programmer and a good architect. You know, and I understand how to leverage latest technologies like Windows Azure, but I'm not a great designer. So we definitely would apply some of those funds to making sure that the user experience, not only visually, but in terms of everything else, like the educational videos and things like that we've talked about.
You talked about your skills as a technologist and an architect. Were some investors, or have you talked to other potential clients or customers for the system who were warmed to the idea that a lot of this stuff was made possible because you're on Azure and a lot of that was easy to set up? Have you had also personally in working on it a good experience with the Azure setup?
Yeah, so I actually just came out of a startup where I leveraged Windows Azure to launch that platform. You know,
Okay.
and I think the reality is that the cloud has made it such that startups need less funds. You know, I've worked with startups in the past as a consultant who, in the first few years, have easily spent $250,000, $500,000 on infrastructure to host their application. You know, buying servers, dozens and dozens of servers. To reach their projected scalability goal. Whereas, you know, when you look at a technology like Windows Azure, you know, it's essentially on-demand scale. So I don't have that capital outlay. Microsoft, in the case of Windows Azure, has made that capital outlay for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about that becoming outdated. And I don't have to worry too much about predicting how much equipment I need, because I can essentially say, hey, give me a couple more instances, you know, and they're there within minutes. So mm-hmm. I think the cloud and technology like Windows Azure is just incredible for startups.
Is there, I mean, you seem very like you've had a really great experience. This will be the second startup you're using the Azure offer on. For people who might be wary about Azure, who might be technical minded and also trying to found a company, any advice you could give them about starting it up, reasons why they should test it other than the scalability you talk about and the cheapness factor, as far as like taking away some of that capital cost as they're trying to get up off the ground? I mean, what about from a technical aspect? Is it easy to use? Are there things that you can do with Azure that you couldn't do with other types of structures? Or, you know, for those of us who are more geeky, I'm not the technical guy, but I mean, I know a lot of people ask about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the benefits of working on Microsoft technology is really kind of the integrated tool set. So when you look at the developer tools like Visual Studio, and then the runtime platform Windows Azure, the tight integration of those tools really makes it very, very simple for me to build and deploy an application on Windows Azure. You know, it's kind of almost too simple. You know, it kind of takes away from the skill set of being an architect and a developer, in the sense that, you know, I can go into Visual Studio, I can say, you know, build me a Windows Azure cloud application. You know, I can do the normal programming in C# and ASP.NET that I would normally do. And then I can say, deploy to Windows Azure, put my credentials in, and there it is, and it's live. So, you know, I think I would encourage people, because the cost is so low, if you have any trepidation about it, just give it a try.
Yeah. And they can do that. They can actually do that either through a Windows Azure offer, which has a 30-day trial, or you could actually do this BizSpark program that you're a part of, and that's at Microsoft.com/BizSpark or just BizSpark.com. You know, you've been a real pleasure to talk to, Carl, and I do wish you luck with Flight Hike. I hope that when you start up Flight Hike and it's actually taking on customers, that you'll give me a free trial or something, and maybe I can try out one of the airports around my hometown in San Francisco and get somewhere with it. We'll keep in touch with you. When do you think you'll officially be able to pull back the curtain and show people stuff about how it works?
You know, I think some of that is dependent upon funding, but we certainly have a date in mind that if we haven't attracted or look like we're going to attract the launch funding that we deem necessary, then we'll probably go live at the start of the new year regardless.
And I have one last question. This is from Sumant Dubey, who's one of the people listening to the chat with us right now. He wonders if the travel is as safe as commercial aviation, or if there are any issues there. What would you say to someone who's wary about that?
It's a really good question, and there's no doubt general aviation is not as safe as commercial aviation, although commercial aviation safety tends to kind of take big hits. You know, you kind of have that one big crash a year maybe, and then it's taken a big hit. But it's safer than driving, you know. So if I think about that 4-hour drive to Cleveland, I'm more likely to be involved in an accident in the drive than I am in the general aviation flight.
All right. Well, hopefully that rests Sumant's mind. And we will look for your launch, and please keep us in touch. Where do we find you online if we want to tweet with you or talk to you about your startup?
Yep. So Twitter is @FlightHike, and our website currently is really just kind of a holding page at the moment, but that's flighthike.com. And my personal Twitter is KJTreier, TReier. That's where you can find us. We also have a Facebook page.
All right. Well, we'll send people there today when we post a review of this talk. And for everybody out there who actually also has your startup, or if you're working with BizSpark right now, get in touch with us at BizSpark on Twitter. We'd love to feature you on the BizSpark show. Also, check out Microsoft.com/BizSpark or BizSpark.com for all the latest offers that are on the BizSpark portal. And this is a huge community. If you haven't really tested it out yet, you're looking at about 55, 56,000 startups in it all over the world in more than 150 countries. And then you've got a huge community that's grown by about 240% on all the social platforms. So if you have questions about your startup, you want to be on the show, tweet us at BizSpark or at Douglas Kretz, C-R-E-T-S. And Carl, it's been a pleasure to see you. For everybody out there who's working on the startups, keep being relentless, and we'll talk to you next week.